The show starts in 3, 2, 1.
There goes that man's jock strap. Oh my God, did you see that?
America's team? Yeah, right.
Oh baby, it's a big day in sports.
There's nothing like battling it out with your teammates all season long to go win a championship.
Green Bay's got it this year. Huge move for him. I think it's going to be a game changer.
We have a lot to talk about this busy week in the sports world. Welcome to the In a League of Their Own podcast.
The In a League of Their Own podcast is brought to you by Golf Kicks. Screw your shoes. Buy Cannadips. Rep Sports. Buy Smooth My Balls. And buy Streamer Loot. Check out the In a League of Their Own merch line today. Welcome to the show. Let's see what Austin and Colin are diving into today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 77 of the In a League of Their Own podcast. Kicking off today's episode, again, with our sports number fact. Number 77 in the 1977 Super Bowl, the Oakland Raiders defeated the Minnesota Vikings 32-14 to win the franchise's first ever Super Bowl. The Raiders posted a Super Bowl record 429 total yards in the game. And lastly for this game, it took place on January 9th at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. And this date still holds to be the earliest Super Bowl schedule in a calendar year. So for as long as I've known, it's always been either the first or second Sunday in February. So back then they had it pretty much a whole month early, but
less teams too.
Yeah, I don't know how many teams would have been back then, probably like mid-20s, something like that. So I'm sure the playoffs didn't take as long because they had less people. So I think when it showed, both the Raiders and the Vikings only had to go through two teams. They had two games to get to the Super Bowl.
Instead of four.
Instead of, yeah, three or four, three if you're a wild card. So that's today's sports fact then. NFL preseason's underway. What's going on over there?
So news coming out yet. New England is still yet to name a starting quarterback for the regular season opener. There's still back and forth between Mac Jones and Cam Newton between who's going to be taking QB1 snaps. I know that they've been battling it out in practice, and Cam has a slight edge, but still – I feel like Bill might think that Jones could maybe pull something out of his, I don't know, maybe he can pull another level, out of his ass and through experience wise in these first couple of preseason games and get into shape that Bill likes to see or wants for his system. But I feel like whoever he does decide to be QB1 will be leading that team to a playoff run.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is typical of Bill Belichick. I mean, even though he had Brady for almost 20 years, like if he didn't have to release,
when
like
Garoppolo was there and he was good, he wasn't sure who was going to,
he's just playing his cards.
Whoever's the best is going
to
do it.
The longest he can wait to, cause I can't remember who they play week one, but obviously the longer he waits to say who their QB one is, that's going to shift whoever they play week one to, because obviously Mac Jones is more of a pocket passer. Cam Newton is very much more versatile, mobile. So if Belichick's like, yeah, I'm not going to say anything, because then that team has to prepare for both, when in his head, he probably already knows. But yeah, like you said, Newton's got the slight edge. I feel like he's had the slight edge. Jones looks good. I definitely say he falls last in this year's draft class for quarterbacks. Jordan, I guess, kind of going into it, is Jordan Love had a decent game. He ended up throwing the game's only touchdown for the Packers. And then, he was last year, so he's not this year's draft class. But two guys from this year's draft class, Justin Fields, showed out in his preseason debut, going 14 for 20, 142 yards, one on the ground, one through the air. Over the Dolphins. And then Trey Lance had an 80-yard touchdown, 128 total yards, but he only went 5 for 14 passing. So, obviously, that completion percentage isn't quite there, but
throwing to number one guys either.
All the guys, honestly, Trevor Lawrence had probably the worst preseason debut. He had a fumble. He had Yeah, he had a couple sacks and a lost fumble, and his numbers weren't really close to these guys. So, but also, he does have less weapons. He has a worse offensive line, so he's not getting inherited as much as Fields and Lance are. But still, when you're drafted number one overall, the number one QB in a draft class, you have highest expectations regardless of who your teammates are when you step on the field.
Yeah, he went 6 for 9 for 71 yards. So it's not that bad, actually. Just he's going to have to learn how to hold on to the ball. I feel like nerves, all that, dude, like your first time ever stepping out in an NFL game wearing an NFL jersey. So feels like the nerves could have got to him. And then one thing that really surprised me was Denver Broncos piss pounding the Vikings. I did not see that coming.
What was the final on that one?
I don't 33-6. Did not see that coming out of all of the games that played. That was piss pounding, especially having your backups and whatever playing. I mean, the Packers, obviously, we got piss pounded to 26-7, but I expected that, not having Rodgers and a lot of our first guys playing, where in that game, you're having a starting quarterback fight, basically. And Drew Lock did pretty good. 5 for 7 for 151 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Teddy Bridgewater went 7 for 8, 74 yards for 1 touchdown. Drew Lock had a 153.3 and Teddy Bridgewater was 144.8. So those guys are fighting very hard for this position. And I don't know who's going to get it. All I got to say is just watch out for Denver in the preseason. They're going to smack teams because these two quarterbacks are fighting for their job. And they're both – I feel like they're both pretty good. And maybe people – I don't know, kind of Drew Lock out a little bit too early.
Yeah.
I feel like from watching what I watched of the SportsCenter highlights, he looked pretty freaking good. He looked like he went from being the guy running all over the field, not scared, but rookie, not knowing what to do, to a guy who stood there comfortably and completed his passes, took the hits, and I don't know, he really did what he was supposed to do, and it was very surprising to see them just shred Minnesota's defense.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in the preseason, you see a lot of lopsided games like this where, like, the Chargers beat the Rams 13-6. That wouldn't happen in the regular season. The Raiders beat the Seahawks 20-7. That probably wouldn't happen. The Packers losing to the Texans 26-7. Like, that
probably won't happen.
Yeah.
But you also, it's sports and you never know.
Yeah. But I mean, also in the preseason, you see it's happened twice that the Browns went 4-0 in the preseason, had their own 16 season. The Lions went 4-0 in the preseason, had their own 16 season. So that's why I always take the preseason with a grain of salt, because you have so many people throughout the different, you have second stringers playing with fourth stringers, you have fourth playing with ones for a drive or two. Like, you have so many different packages out there that you're not going to have in the regular season unless somebody gets hurt or shits the bed or something in the game. So I feel like you see a lot of lopsided games because the opposing team doesn't know how to prepare for it, seeing a number three string quarterback throwing to a number one receiver, or you're like, your third string defensive line is out there with your first string cornerbacks. Like, it's odd, but it's at the same time, it's got to be challenging as a coach to be able to have all those different levels of guys, 10, 15, 20 year guys with rookies out on the field together that all have to be on the same page. I mean, obviously at that level, you're a professional athlete, but
they're all in the NFL. They all got to be able to.
Yeah, but obviously you could tell a difference between a rookie cornerback versus a 15-year cornerback, like, instantly, like, watching just, like, how they either get caught too much looking at the quarterback or they get lost with, like, 10 yards of separation from the receiver. Like, that can happen to anybody, but usually the number ones have it locked down better, but or even quarterbacks for that matter, the velocity on their ball. You can tell the difference between a QB1 and a QB3, just how long it takes the ball to get there sometimes.
Well, younger guys have higher velocity too than an older guy.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the preseason underway. Week two is going to be this week. You'll start to see less and less of the starters. Usually week one, week two, they'll play a drive or two. Again, kind of going back to the Packers, Rodgers won't be out on the field at all this preseason. It'll basically be Jordan Love and Kurt Benekert, which going back to Jordan Love, he had injured his shoulder in Saturday's preseason game, and he's expected to be sidelined for most of the week and could miss Saturday's game against the Jets as well. So, and the Packers only have three quarterbacks on the roster. So if Love isn't ready to go, Kurt Benekert, if he balls out against the Jets, he could take that number two spot from Love.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Not a shot. I personally don't think, with everything surrounding Jordan Love, especially taking him as high as we did last year, and then picking up Kurt Benekert, who was a third-string quarterback, just a practice guy for the Falcons. I mean, you never really know until you get him into a real game. So, like, if he got into a real game and did that, then yeah, maybe. But because, like you said, preseason's preseason, you're going against fourth, fifth, sixth-string guys just trying to make the roster. I don't feel like the preseason has really any implication other than just depth chart battles for the most part between, okay, we have seven cornerbacks, we can only keep five. Who's going to be, you know, that type of thing. But yeah, especially now that they're down to three games too in the preseason, I feel like teams are even taking it easier than they did with the four games, knowing that, hey, we really don't have to really have any wear and tear on our top guys, and we can just bang the shit out of all of our second through fourth, fifth string guys. So
yeah.
Helping coaches, rookie coaches work on their play calling, you know, new offensive, defensive coordinators, making sure it's just a lot of like pre-trial stuff just to ramp it up for week one, which is going to be very awesome. I can't wait. And one thing to touch on real quick that I felt so bad about, I read Tampa Bay Buccaneers waived former Navy cornerback Cameron Kinley, who went through all the trouble to get the special exemption to play in the NFL. He ended up getting waived. So he ain't on the roster anymore, so it don't matter.
Well, I mean, he was a cornerback, right?
Yeah, I think he was like a fifth string or sixth string.
Yeah, I mean, the corner after the like receiver position and linebacker position, cornerbacks are right there as well, where you only have four on the field, but you probably have seven, eight on your roster. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. You have two cornerbacks, two safeties, so secondary. You probably have 8 to 10 secondary guys on your roster total between your safeties and your quarterbacks. So it's, again, it's one of those deep positions to where, yeah, it sucks to get waived, but at the same time, somebody else either surprise retirement or gets COVID or gets hurt for a couple weeks the rest of the season. That's one of those positions where you got to be ready at any moment because all those teams need those extra guys. But
oh yeah. And then speaking of being ready at any given moment, how about the story about Lions running back Craig Reynolds? Scored his first career touchdown a day after he got a call from the Detroit Lions scout to come in for a tryout. And during the game, he said he was introducing himself in the huddle to everybody because this was the second day that he'd shown up and he didn't get to talk to anybody. So he's like, hi, yeah, my name's this, I'm on this. And he ended up scoring a touchdown in his first game, his first football game of his life. And he ended up scoring. So I think that's pretty freaking awesome.
That he was doing DoorDash, I think, right?
Yep.
In North Two days ago, he was doing DoorDash before he was.
Yep, he was a DoorDasher and then got a call from the Lions. And he flew in from North Carolina to Detroit, had to try out, and then they signed him. And he's like, yep, come on and play. Next day, scores a touchdown.
Yeah, that's awesome.
49 yards on 6 carries.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. But yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, another guy who I mean, he's been around for a while, but kind of circling back to the Packers again is Devin Funchess, who opted out last year due to COVID. All eyes are on Jordan Love to see him on the field, but the person I like the most showing up was Funchess. He had 6 catches for 70 yards and was kind of that he was the receiver one of that game, and he showed up and played like it. So good to see him. I mean, obviously he's going to be behind Adams, Scantling, and then maybe be right there with Lazard for that third or fourth spot on the receiver roster. Obviously, he's going to be on the roster, but yeah, I mean, it's good to have a guy like that. He's, I don't know, been around for 8 to 10 years, somewhere in there. Had most of his career in Carolina. But yeah, good to see him back. Kind of forgot about him until I saw him playing in training camp. That I was like, who the heck is 11? I'm like, oh yeah, Funchess. He opted out last year. So yeah, that's all I had with that Packer game. If you had any more points, I got one more to throw out there.
Yeah, I got two. Former emergency quarterback Jake Fromm. I don't know if anybody you guys remember him. He was in the show QB1 on Netflix. He ended up going to Georgia, and that he was the reason that Justin Fields transferred to Ohio State, because he was given the starting job at Georgia. He kind of had a rough end to his senior year, or his last two seasons. It kind of dropped a little bit in the draft. However, he got in his number called in his first NFL debut game in the preseason for the Bills, and he led them down a game-winning drive. So he shows that he still got it, and he still got what it takes to compete at the NFL level, and hopefully some team down the road, if he can stay ready, that he can get a shot to go somewhere, because I always thought he was pretty good, just not as mobile as some of the other guys, because his knees were kind of fucked up from high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, obviously in Buffalo, Josh Allen, like, he's got that locked down until
he doesn't get the shit beat out of him.
Yeah, until he either gets hurt or retires or decides to leave his contract after 8 years or whatever he just extended to. But for that two position, it's Mitchell Trubisky right now, who's been very hit and miss, wishy-washy from his time in Chicago. It looked like he's been doing pretty well in training camp for the Bills, but again, Fromm is in that opportunity to where if Trubisky can't improve off of what he was doing in Chicago, he could get that. I mean, it's not like he'd ever see the field at the number two spot, but at least builds his value to where, like you said, if another team is looking for somebody down the road, being a number two backup quarterback who looks good is better than a number three guy who's just going through the reps in practice. And because you don't go from really number three quarterback on one team to a number one, but so often you see that quarterback carousel, a backup for a team becomes a starter for another team,
or a team loses two guys and they need a guy.
Yeah,
I always felt bad for Mitch Trubisky. I always thought that he was a decent quarterback, and sometimes he turned it on, it was absolutely great, but it was Chicago. It seemed like the play calling that they did, they never trusted him almost. Like, when the game was on the line, they'd go with the safe play instead of letting him just try to make something happen. And he even spoke out about that multiple times on how mentally it had worn him down so much that he wasn't even ready for most of the games, because he wasn't sure if people were trusting him when he was throwing them the ball and doing this and calling the plays. And that's got to be rough for a young kid who came out of college, who's expected to lead one of the oldest franchises to success, and you have a little bit of success early, and then boom, no trust, he gets sent out of town, and now he's learning under Josh Allen, a kid who's way younger than him. But he says it's awesome to be in a building where you feel wanted and appreciated. So
yeah,
that's, hats off to that, because that's all you really want.
And I feel like, too, he had so much pressure put on his shoulders because he was drafted ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. So people are like, oh, if he was drafted ahead, he has to be better than both of them. And that's
not true.
That's not true. That's not how that always goes. I mean,
it's who's going to fit the best, they think.
I mean, look at this year, for example, off the first preseason game, Trevor Lawrence was drafted. That was the first quarterback. But again, I would say Justin Fields and Trey Lance both had a better game, and they were drafted lower. So again, it all depends on who fits their team the most. And again, what you're inheriting when you step on that field with your offensive line and your weapons.
Right. And you have a rookie head coach as well down in Miami too. So you got two rookies and two huge pieces of a game. So that could have been a lot of reasons, for his struggles as well. getting used to the play calls, and Urban Meyer now going back to the NFL and seeing what he can do. I don't know. I just – if that team struggles, I feel like this will be the end of Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I feel like he's – it was kind of surprising that – I don't even know who else was in, like, the running for that position in Jacksonville. Basically, as soon as Urban Meyer threw his name in the hat, that was all anybody talked about.
Yeah, because Matt Patricia said he was going back to New England. So that was that. I forgot. One of the coaches, I think it was Buccaneers assistant, Houston's assistant. There was like three guys that were going for that job. But all of it from the beginning, since the opening, it was, if Urban Meyer wants it, it's his job.
Yeah.
So they wanted him.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Again, it's a preseason. It's, I mean, being in the AFC South, they're obviously going to be expected to be at the bottom with the Texans and, yeah, like them and the Texans at kind of the bottom. The Colts and the Titans will be kind of up doing their own thing, being playoff teams or being bubble teams. And so, but again, I don't know. It's always hard to tell early on like this, but like, again, it's a lot of pressure too. Everybody's just high on the horse of Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. And obviously it was unrealistic expectations. It's like, they're not going to go out there in their very first game together on the field and ball out and have a perfect game. So come week three, if they look the same and they're still having mistakes, and it's like, okay, like maybe be a little concerned, but they still have two more games to play before they get to that point.
Absolutely. And then my last point that I have on the NFL today is the first team, which is, I feel like, going to be a trend here. The New Orleans Saints are requiring a proof of COVID-19 vaccination card, or you must test negative at the doors in order to get inside the building. I believe this is going to be their full stadiums. If they're going to continue to have full stadiums, I feel like that's what you're going to need. You're going to need a vaccination or a negative test. And yeah, good to go. Still more and more every single day. More players are being added to the list. I know just, I think it was 2 or 3 days ago, I know the Texans again had like 4 or 5 guys now that they had to go back on the list. So, I don't know. NFL is getting really quiet as we're getting really close to week one, when there's going to be full stadiums, when there's all these breakouts and shit happening all over. It's kind of interesting. Now, in the midst of all this chaos, the NFL goes completely silent.
Yeah, I mean, and they say too, back the Super Bowl 2 years ago, how they're saying it's traceable that X amount of cases that happened were because of the Super Bowl, because they had whatever 70, 80,000 people down in Tampa early February, right before COVID hit. And then they all like went to their parts of the country or the world, and like it was traceable back to that. Now do that times 16 every single Sunday. You know what I mean? Like it can get messy super quick if they're not careful. Yeah, and then the last point I had was that recently retired QB and 2020 Comeback Player of the Year Alex Smith is going to be joining ESPN as an NFL analyst. So, I mean, always great to see QBs are some of the highest IQ players in the league. So it's always great to see them giving back any way they can to the game.
Yeah, I believe they said that they were slotting him in on Monday Night Countdown, I think was the...
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yep, that's what it is. So he'll be on SportsCenter every now and then, talking about football. And then Monday Night Countdown, Sunday NFL Countdown, he will be on there. And then as well, he's going to contribute to ESPN's coverage of the Super Bowl and the 2022 draft. So you'll see him a handful of times this year on the television. And like you said, hearing a quarterback get to speak on how they see things is really amazing to hear and understand for a person who never got to understand the position at that deep of a level, to where it's just cool to learn.
For sure. Yeah, then wrapping things up there with the NFL, we'll switch things over to the NBA. I mean, I only got 2 points to talk about. Probably the biggest thing in the NBA right now is that Clippers trade Patrick Beverley, Rajon Rondo, and Daniel Oturu to the Grizzlies in exchange for Eric Bledsoe. So after locking up Kawhi Leonard last week or earlier last week, or I know last week at some point he finalized his deal because he was a free agent. They go and make some moves, probably to free up space so that that signing could go through to keep probably him and Paul George, and maybe try to make room for bringing in somebody else. Cause Rondo is probably he's the oldest out of these three. But the other two guys, I don't know what kind of deals they're on, but Eric Bledsoe is also one of those guys that, I mean, he's never won a championship, but from his time in Milwaukee, he was, I mean, not a terrible guard, but he got the job done. So I guess we'll see what he does out in LA.
Yeah. And then the only one point that I have is Jay-Z and Philadelphia 76 owner Michael Rubin are basically trying to get the state of New York legalized in sports gambling. They want to add these revenues to a part of the arena as the Arizona Cardinals that were the first ones doing that.
Oh, the sports book betting at their
inside
stadium.
So a whole bunch of, like I said, once one team's doing it, every other team's gonna try to be. And right now in New York, is trying to get a thing put into all of their five. Okay, so they want to get one in the Yankee Stadium, they want to get one in the Bills Stadium, one in the Buffalo Sabres Stadium, one in the New York FC for the soccer, one for the Knicks, one for the Nets. And they're willing to put $1.8 billion up to get this like going. And then they have to pay $25 million to the state of New York, and then the state will tax all of revenue by 50%. So this is going to be done pretty quick here. The state of New York, as we all know right now, is really hurting. They need to get some money going in really quick if they plan to hopefully stop their city from becoming a pile of shit.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, with the Cardinals getting on board with it first, I'm sure you're going to see all the states that are legalized jump on board with it too. And the ones that aren't legalized to use that as a tangent with the NFL to kind of urge their state to legalize sports betting. Again, not super optimistic that it's going to happen in like Wisconsin, where the Packers are going to be like, oh, we should jump on this too.
Probably 5 years, maybe.
Yeah, they're going to be probably one of the last states to do it, just kind of like with legalizing marijuana. They're going to be one of the last ones to do it as well. So, I mean, slowly but surely, they'll kind of get caught up with everybody else. But, yeah, I mean, it's cool to see sports betting finally kind of making a big jump over the past really 6 months to a year. It's always kind of been around and kind of in the shadows. And just recently, it seems like states and professional teams are finding a way to kind of, I don't know, find loopholes and find ways to get it out there and obviously turn around and make them money. Yeah, then the other point I had was that Thanasis Antetokounmpo, Giannis's brother, agrees to a 2-year deal to stay with the Bucks. Obviously, one of those bench guys you love to have on, has a lot of great energy, and then garbage time towards the end of some games. He comes in and he's efficient too. So good to see them keep him for at least 2 more years. And then I know his youngest brother, Alex, is coming up soon too. So I wonder if he might go join Kostas out in LA, or if Giannis is going to try to make a move to bring him to Milwaukee as well. From my understanding, it seems like he's going to be better. Alex is going to be the second best behind Giannis. Like, he looks like he's projected to be better than Thanasis and Kostas. So, but I think he's only like 15 or 16 right now. So he's still got a couple years to go, but you never know. I think he's over in like the like Greece league or like European league or something. He's not even playing in the U.S. right now, I don't think. But yeah, that's all I had for the NBA then. Before we jump into the MLB, if we can jump into today's Or No segment.
Yeah, so today's Or No segment revolves around the MLB. I'm going to be asking Colin 8 questions surrounding MLB teams and whether or not they will be in the postseason.
Oh boy.
So the Tampa Bay Rays right now are 71-47. They have a 3-game lead over the Boston Red Sox. Are they going to win the division and make the playoffs or no?
Yeah, they've made a push ever since it seemed like the Red Sox are going to be one of those teams right before the trade deadline to go out and make moves. The
deadline's over.
Well, yeah, I'm saying like before the deadline happened, I thought the Red Sox would – they were favorited to pick up one if not two of the Cubs players that were looking to move out, but they ended up going elsewhere. So I'm sure they did make some moves, not any notable ones I could think of off the top of my head. So I don't see them making a push to knock the Rays off that number one spot. So, yeah, I think the Rays will keep that number one spot in the division.
Okay, sounds good. Then moving over to the Central, you have the Chicago White Sox, 68-50 with a 10-game lead over the Cleveland Indians. Will they hold on for the number one spot?
Yeah, it's baseball. It's 162-game season, so every team's going to have their roller coaster of a season where they go on long streaks and have some wins or some losses in between there as well. But the White Sox seem like one of those teams where they'll win 7-10, but then they only lose like two or three of their next five, and then they're back to a 6 or 7 game win streak. And obviously with a 10 game lead over the Indians, who haven't really made too much noise this year. White Sox. I'll definitely see them winning the division this year.
Moving down to the West, the Houston Astros currently 70-47 with a 2.5-game lead over the Oakland A's. Will they hold on to first place?
Unfortunately, yeah, I know everybody still gives them shit for their winning their championship, banging on barrels and stuff, and that whole thing where the first time that they showed up to an arena this year, they get a lot of boos. But they're either the favorites or second favorites. And I know they're in the top three for sure for favorites to go to the World Series. So they still have all their guys. Nothing's really changed there. And obviously, dominant leading that division yet again. So, yeah, the actual Astros will definitely be back to the postseason this year.
Okay, sounds good. Then between the Boston Red Sox, New York Yankees, and the Oakland A's, which two of those three teams are going to get the wild card spot? Red Sox are 69-51. Oakland A's, hottest team in baseball right now, are 9-1 over their last 10. They're 68-50. And New York Yankees are 65-52.
So after the Yankees made some moves, obviously getting Rizzo was a good move for them, but I think he's on the COVID list right now, so he's not even playing. He's still out for a couple more days. Their odds moved up greatly to win the division, make a World Series appearance, but they haven't really made a lot of noise the past, I mean, 2 or 3 weeks since the trade light deadline's been up like I thought they would. So
7-10 over their last 10, or 7-3, excuse me.
7-3 over the last 10, yeah. But I mean, even still, they're behind because they're third right now in that division, right? Behind the.
Yep, Tampa's in first, Boston's in second, 3 games back, and then the Yankees are 5.5 games back. And then Toronto Blue Jays, I guess, are still technically in the hunt at 7.5. Because Baltimore is absolutely dead last in baseball. They're 32 games out.
Yeah. No, I definitely like the A's. The A's are pretty much going to, I think, are going to be a lock for one of the wild cards. It's just going to be a matter of
the Astros.
You think so?
Yeah. And I really hope that the Astros don't end up making it. But
I mean, it's At that point, it'll come down to record, which I think the Astros have a pretty decent record to where they
70-47.
And the other teams are like 65-69. Okay, so they're only a game up there.
Because the Rays are first in the AL with 71. Then the Astros are second with 70. Then Boston's in third with 69. White Sox and A's are tied with 68. Then 65-63. And then it's way down after that. So there's like six teams that are fighting, basically.
Okay.
Because the Central's locked up. Indians are 10 games behind the White Sox. So they're the only team that basically has a cushion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've liked the A's all year. It seems like a series that they're expected to lose against good teams. They either steal a game or two games or win the series. So it seems like they're kind of one of those teams that's just been clawing along. And even though they're in the shadow of the Astros, they're just quietly being a really good team this year. So I definitely put them as a lock for one of the wild cards. And then, yeah, it all depends. I mean, I'm going to say the Red Sox hang on and hold off the Yankees, but you never know. The Yankees, they always find a way to be one of the greatest teams in baseball. So you don't want to count them out, but just as the standings sit currently, I'll say that the Red Sox and the A's are going to be the two wild cards.
All right. Sounds good. Then jumping over here to the NL East, you have the Atlanta Braves currently sitting first, 62-56 with a one game lead over the Phillies. Who do you think the Phillies are going to take first place in this division, or do you think the Braves are going to hold it off?
Honestly, surprises me that the Braves kind of made another push, especially losing Ronald Acuna Jr. for the year with his ACL injury. The Phillies are really hot. Seems like they just got on a little cold streak. The Phillies will probably go on another hot streak here soon.
And then the Mets are right there as well.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, DeGrom, who again is having a historical season as a starting pitcher, can't stay healthy. So when you have your ace hit and miss, yeah, the Mets got Javi Baez from the Cubs as well, but I don't know. I like where the Phillies are at right now. Harper seems like he's kind of had a second awakening since he's come over to Philly. He came over for a ton of money and hasn't really played to earn it. And then since the All-Star break, he's kind of stepped it up and leading the team as far as hitting goes. So I'm going to say that the Phillies end up passing the Braves again. The Mets will maybe move up into second. Yeah, I can see the Phillies getting hot and maybe even winning the division by more than five games when it's all said and done.
Sounds good. Then moving over to the NL Central, the Milwaukee Brewers currently sit eight games ahead of the Cincinnati Reds, 72-47. Do you think the Milwaukee Brewers hold first place and hit 100 wins?
I'm going to say yes, that they hold the first place in the division. I think the last two or three series that they've had against the Reds, they've won the series. So the one team that they have to worry about, they've been able to win series against them to extend that lead.
It's just 50 some games left.
Yeah. So they got to win
28
of their last 50 games. I'm going to say they don't. I'm going to say that they probably get close to like 90, 95 wins. But just because as the postseason gets closer and closer, you're not going to push your bullpen more than you need to, having guys pitch 7-8 complete games at this point. They'll take losses knowing that they have enough of a cushion. All they have to do is win the division. They don't even need to worry about the wild card at this point, unless they completely shit the bed, lose a couple people or whatever is going to happen, which usually, I mean, has happened in the past with the Brewers like quite often, but usually at this point of the season, they're done and out of it by now and they're done. So to see them still in first place with that big of a lead, I don't think that they're going to let it go to waste this year. But yeah, I don't see them hitting 100 wins this year, but I say they come within 10 of 100.
Sounds good. Yeah, they currently hold the third best record in baseball. And then going to the NL West, the most competitive division, which will be in football and in baseball this season, The San Francisco Giants, currently atop of the division, 76-42, have a four-game lead over the Los Angeles Dodgers. Do the Giants win the division?
I mean, I honestly expected with them lose with Trevor Bauer going through his whole thing that it would have hurt that Dodgers bullpen more than it seemed like it had, and that they kind of fall apart. Coming
back pretty soon.
I actually have some news on that. I'll get to that when we're done with this. But I don't know. The Giants, they just seem like, especially it was fun watching them. Either it was either the weekend, but last weekend or the weekend before when they played the Brewers, they beat the Brewers. They won that series like 2-1 or whatever, and they looked really good. I watched some of the highlights from all three games, and I don't know, the Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. They're right there with the Yankees, having really deep pockets, going out, getting whoever they want to try to go win a World Series every year. But the Giants just seem like that team that's clicking on all, or that's firing on all cylinders right now, to where unless somebody goes on a cold streak or their bullpen starts getting hurt. But I don't know. I like where the Giants are at this year. And plus, I just want to see somebody different at the top of the NL West than the Dodgers. So I'll say that the Giants hang on and win that division.
All right. And then my last question here for you, the San Diego Padres, who were atop of the NL West about a month and a half ago, are now 67-53. Do they hold on and get the second wild card spot, or do they get passed?
I mean, I don't even.
Phillies, Mets, Cardinals, Reds are the only teams that could do it.
It's all going to depend. I know Tatis Jr. is dealing with his shoulder injury. I'm not even sure if he's been back on the field yet. I know that they're scared that they're going to lose him the rest of the year, but it looks like he's at least going to be able to come back. So, I mean, it's all going to depend if he can come back and get back to his hitting ways of home run after home run every night, almost hitting a cycle, high scoring Padres team. I mean, I'm going to say he comes back and that happens, but I don't know if it would be enough to have a better record and do better than the Mets or the Braves.
The Padres are currently 67 wins. Phillies are 61, Mets are 59, Reds are 64, Cardinals are 61.
Okay, so they do have the best record right now.
They
have the one number one wild.
Because the Dodgers,
that's right.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they had that big of a lead for that wild card spot.
Yeah, the Dodgers have a 6-game lead over the second wild card spot, and they have basically – they have a 2-game lead over the Reds. Technically, the Reds would be in second place. They have a 2-game lead over the Reds.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too threatened by the Reds. I feel like it'd definitely be the Mets. The Mets would be the team, or the Braves if they can find a way to.
I think it'd be the Reds who'd make it, because Cubs suck ass, Pirates suck ass. So those are easy wins right there.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Padres got to play the Giants, Dodgers. Granted, they have the Diamondbacks who suck, but the Rockies are still hit and miss. And then in your other division, you have Braves, Phillies, Mets, Marlins, Nationals are all within 12 games. All teams are within 12 games.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess by that, then if they have that lead, it would make sense if the Padres hang on, especially if Tatis is coming back. That's only going to make them better. So, yeah, then that means the NL West has three teams coming out of it for the playoffs. So,
yeah, and the Dodgers and Padres will be playing each other the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, looking at the rest of it, then, yeah, San Diego will probably hang on then, so long as they don't lose anybody else.
I think it'd be cool if the Brewers and the Reds both made it. NL Central needs some rep.
Yeah. Usually only one team comes out of there.
And they usually get piss pounded the first round.
Yeah.
Unless it was the Cubs winning the World Series and us shitting in the bed against the Nationals.
Yeah. I don't know. I like where the Brewers are at this year. It's giving me kind of 2011 vibes with just
we're gonna win the World Series. It's gonna be Bucks, Brewers, Packers. All three are gonna win.
Call us Boston.
And then Rodgers is gonna leave.
And Yelich is gonna leave. No. Yeah. Yelich just signed a big contract like last year or 2 years ago too. Yeah, and Giannis just signed his Supermax. So he's So Sid Milwaukee's in a good spot right now, especially if they can have the Bucks and the Brewers win championships. That turn
brings a lot of money to the state.
Yeah, one of the smallest franchises or cities in sports to go win two titles in 1 year would be awesome. Yeah, then moving over to the MLB here for a few points then. Sticking with the Brewers, they take their weekend series against the Pirates 2-1, including a 2-1 victory yesterday in which all three runs were scored in the first three innings. So if anybody was at that game, probably got trashed because it was probably a boring one to watch. But D-back pitcher Tyler Gilbert delivered the league's eighth no-hitter of the year in his very first ever start in a 7-0 win over the Padres Saturday. Yesterday, Indians pitcher Tristan McKenzie almost made it two no-hitters over the weekend as he had a perfect game through eight innings. Cleveland still would go on to win that game over Detroit 11-0. And then Trevor Bauer news. After many delays, he's expected to be in court today as the woman who filed the report accusing him of sexual assault is petitioning for a restraining order against him. And apparently that's going to kind of get the legal process moving forward of him getting charged for it or not. Bauer's representatives are still pleading him as not guilty and plan to refute all the claims as they should. That's what their side is supposed to do. But the couple things that have come out against him seem there's been pictures, there's been texts against him. So I guess we'll kind of see how much weight that holds. But yeah, I guess after today happens, we'll kind of see more, I guess, what happened in today's court case.
Yeah. And I don't have nothing about the MLB.
Sounds good. Then I'll throw things over to you for the NHL.
Still, again, nothing really crazy going on. Toronto Maple Leafs star forward Austin Matthews, he undergoes wrist surgery. He'll be back for the beginning of the season. Minnesota Wild re-signed forward Kevin Fiala to a one-year $5.1 million deal. It's a big re-signing for them as their rookie of the year. Kirill Kaprizov is still MIA and not sure he's going to be returning to the NHL. As rumor has it, he was offered an eight-figure contract for 1 year to stay over in Russia. Early talks between his agent and the Wild. The Wild want to keep signing to a 7-8 year deal. Kaprizov doesn't want anything more than I think it was like a 2 year deal or something like that because he wants to be able to go back home whenever he wants to play. So it's going to be very interesting whether he chooses the 8-figure deal from Russia or if he comes back to the States and only makes a couple million. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And then the last news coming out of the NHL, Joe Thornton to play in his 24th NHL season after signing with the Florida Panthers on Friday. He has been signing one-year deals recently, tried last season with the Toronto Maple Leafs to get over that hump and make a Stanley Cup final. Hopefully he can get to a Stanley Cup here with the Florida Panthers. They're a good team bringing in him as the vet and experience. Obviously, he's not going to play a ton out there, but yeah, that'd be cool to see him end up winning a Stanley Cup no matter what team he ends up on. And then, yeah, that's pretty much all I have for today's show.
Sounds good. That's all I had as well.
All right, sounds good. Well, thank you, everyone, for stopping by. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe to all of our social media platforms, especially this YouTube one right here that you're watching and listening to us on right now. Also, go over to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Give us the 5-star rating. It helps us move us up the charts. Check out the merchandise store. Yeah, like I said, we appreciate all the love and support we've been getting, especially over the past month. We just couldn't do it without you guys. So we appreciate it very much. And we will see you guys on Wednesday.
Hey, Wednesday, everybody.